Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Awesome. Well, welcome. Hi, Blake. We're here to talk about everything that we've learned about scaling and hypergrowth. And you all have Blake with me. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for having us. My name is Blake Walters. I'm a director of engineering at Circle CI. It's nice to be here today.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm Lena Reinhardt. I'm an executive coach and consultant and trainer for engineering managers. And I've been an engineering executive for the last 5 years, and previously I've spent the last decade or so running and scaling engineering organizations in times of high change. And that's actually when Blake and I also used to work together for quite a while, and went through periods of hypergrowth together. And so we want to talk a bit about our experiences today and share that with you, and super excited to speak to some of the things that we've learned along the way.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And let's just dive right in. The first thing that I was curious to establish a little bit is basically principles, values, sort of higher level things that go into thinking about hypergrowth. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what we actually mean when we talk about hypergrowth. That might be useful to establish. From your experience, Blake, what's been sort of hypergrowth, high growth? How have you experienced that?
Yeah, for me, I don't think that there's any specific number I can give. It's not, you know, growing from, it's not a 2x multiplier, a 5x multiplier, a 10x multiplier. When I think of hypergrowth, it's scaling yourself, your org, the number of people, the audience that you're trying to reach through whatever you're building or doing, and changing in a way that can fundamentally shift your organization's culture. Whether you decide to let it to or not, it's a period of rapid scale in any of those vectors, such that it really has an impact on how you do things, processes, hiring, onboarding, coaching, the level of hierarchy you need, all of those sorts of things that really can shake the foundation of an organization itself if you let it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would agree to that and sort of build on it and say, like, I've gone through hypergrowth or high growth when going from 5 to 10 employees. That can be one, or you go from 15 to 40 and do that in a very short time frame. And the sort of fundamental shifting, I think, that you described is a really good way to capture it, because so many of the ways of working, like operating models, governance models, won't work anymore. It will sort of blow up relatively quickly. But at the same time, the way of, like you mentioned, culture, and with that, the way of thinking, the way you view your own role, and also maybe what's made you successful and what will make you successful in the future is also going to shift quite dramatically. And I think we'll probably touch on that a bit more later. And I think with that, the biggest sort of unifying characteristic across also high growth, hyper growth scenarios, just that the amount of change really accelerates. And that's basically just compared to the baseline, and whatever your baseline was, basically can put you in hypergrowth. And of course, there's sort of in the startup life cycle, there's a couple more specific definitions for it. But in the end, I really think hypergrowth, high growth is about the perception and the experience that everyone there is going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the amazing things is that it's really, it's a thing that can happen to you depending on your position in an organization, or it's a thing that you can take control of and really seize an opportunity to grow yourself. Usually there's lots of ambiguity that comes along with these sorts of phases in a company's life cycle, and it's really a great opportunity to step up, to level up yourself, your ability, the things you're comfortable with, to step outside that comfort zone and to help a lot of people around you through this change period.
Great. Because one thing that, and I think that's why it's so great that you're calling this out, is that your job is going to fundamentally change. And most likely you won't actually know in which ways. And at the same time, the environment that you're in is going to fundamentally change at the same time. And so a lot of the markers that you've known or guidelines you've used prior to that or structures that have made you effective previously won't necessarily work anymore. So Blake and I have both worked with a lot of engineering teams during high change, during hypergrowth. And what we want to focus on a little bit today is basically sharing what we've seen makes people successful, what we've seen has helped people in navigate the ambiguities that we've already mentioned, and how to essentially adjust to that sort of change of your role and to the change of the environment at the same time, because it's a lot of change to go around. And the amount of change obviously can also just do things to your brain, and it might also be worth just acknowledging that there are some studies that show that ambiguity or uncertainty can be like as painful as physical pain in the longer term, because the mental, like neurological receptor that gets triggered can actually sort of, if in a sort of fluid state for a really long time, and if dealing with uncertainty for a really long time, it can basically hurt in our brain. And so with that also have impact on our mental and physical well-being. And of course, one of the human core needs is predictability or choice, and the ability to both know things that are going to happen, but also have a certain degree of control and choice in what happens to us. Blake just mentioned there can be a reactiveness, but there's also a choice involved in sort of how you deal with these changes. So let's actually talk a little bit about principles, values, before we dive into more details on specific areas that are impacted during hypergrowth and ways that we found can be useful to think about them. So Blake, what are some sort of values or principles that you found useful for senior leaders, engineers in times of hypergrowth, high change?
Yeah, so for me, and I've used this, I think, you know, Lane will remember this from our interviews back in the day. I think anybody that's worked with me knows that I deeply believe in the tenets of agile development. And that's lowercase a agile, not uppercase a agile necessarily. It's the idea of small but consistent changes and improvements, of evaluating the process, of having ritual, not for ritual's sake, but because it's a check-in on how we're doing as people, as teams, as organizations, and really reflecting on not necessarily just the output, not just the delivery, not just what did we accomplish yesterday, last week, last month, last quarter, but how did we accomplish it? What are we doing that's working? What are we doing that's not working? What are the changes that we can make? What are the subtle ways that we can show up differently, that we can bring ourselves to the table differently, that we can optimize our teams differently? And what is the smallest timeline that we can get feedback on that to really see if it's working or not? And being honest with ourselves about throwing away what's not working, being open to, you know, retrying things that maybe didn't work in the past, really reevaluating sort of things that, you know, processes that didn't work when we were 10 people, but might be suited for when we're 100 people or 1,000 people. So it's really being willing to try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so now,
Lena, how about you?
What I just heard from you was also this idea of, agile with the small a. So in the sense of like the spirit of agile, not necessarily agile by the book. If there's such thing. So this idea of sort of keeping changes small, but also doing that as a means to really learn quickly and be able to iterate and improve over time. And I think that's a really important one. I also think if you're in a position of hypergrowth in your organization and you're looking for some tenants, another thing to think about can be it's always really what matters to your organization. And that's such a basic thing to say, but actually in times of high change in particular, it can be really tricky to identify what's important. What are we valuing as an organization? What are we optimizing for? Because as the amount of change increases, those things can often get really blurry, or they also may shift really drastically if your organization is pushing to respond to changes in the market and change strategy. Those things also may actually explicitly change. And so making sure that you understand what's important and also continuously check in on that over time and make sure you have that context on, you know, what is the reason for changes? What are we trying to optimize for? What are our goals that we're trying to achieve? Those are super simple questions, but oftentimes those can be really hard to get clear answers on. And so finding those answers and making sure you understand those things can be a really important part of being effective in hypergrowth.
So, Lena, where would you suggest that folks, whether they're engineering managers, staff engineers, leaders, even ICs, where would you suggest folks go to get that context that they need to do better to really rise to the challenge of hypergrowth?
Mm. I mean, I think your manager is ideally like a great starting point, but you may also be dealing with a situation where your manager is also quite overloaded and overworked, especially when hypergrowth is happening, a lot of changes going on. That may very likely be the case. And so another point maybe to check with peers, check with other business stakeholders. If you haven't established them yet, establishing like solid business relationships with people outside of your team. Maybe you have partners in the marketing domain or in an area like product management, where you can get some more insight and again, like broaden the context that you're operating under. Another thing, if you're not able to get answers, is to basically try things or basically put forth what you believe. I found that quite effective technique with people who are just really busy and struggling. Like some people also struggle with communicating concisely. And so it may also be worth just saying, okay, hey, here are three things I understand right now. Is this actually the case? Give me a yes, no, to actually just unblock you and get you going. How have you managed some of the sort of communication things that come with the like high growth environments?
Yeah, for me, I think one of the key things I learned very quickly when growing, you know, numbers of teams, numbers of reports, the varied nature of the folks I was talking to, being very vulnerable and very clear about what I needed is asking for help, asking for resources, asking for information is not a sign of weakness. I tell my folks these days that saying I don't know is a superpower as long as you follow it up with I don't know. And here's how we're going to find out, and here's when. And so one of the things that I try to encourage folks, especially when there's lots of ambiguity in the air, is to push information. I try to let people know that I am not going to be on top of every Slack thread. I will try my absolute hardest to read every line of every email that comes to me. But it's best not to assume that I have all the information, that your peers have all the information, or folks like VPs or execs or the folks that you really look to drive the organization has every bit of nuance that you have. So when you feel like something needs to be pushed, push it. Make stuff self-serve if you can. If your team has dashboards and processes, make sure you're fulfilling the contracts of what's expected of you and your teams. But if something feels off, if something feels really great, whatever the case may be, if it feels exceptional or out of the norm, push it. Push it up to your manager. Push it up to your technical leaders. Highlight it. Get some eyeballs on it. Get a conversation going, because that's really how we absorb this information at an organizational level and at a team level. It's really just by pushing information. Yeah. Talked a lot about it in Circle Z about over communicating, especially in this day and age in a remote environment. You don't have water cooler talk. We don't have body language. We don't really have time where teams are sitting physically in a conference room together, ideating and brainstorming. So really pushing out information and making space for that information to be absorbed is deeply helpful.
Yeah, I would 100% agree on that. And there's this rule of thumb of like having to communicate everything 7 times. And I like having tried this for a while, I think it's actually quite true. And especially if you're able to like, communicate things across different channels, it can really make a difference. And I think that point about over-communicating is really good as well. I would kind of add as a caveat, like over-communicate with a purpose. And so it shouldn't just be for the sake of over-communicating, because then you're just also going to add to the noise. And in a high change environment, there's probably already a lot of that anyway. And so making sure that that communication also has a clear purpose. And I think the whole point you made about pushing information out is so crucial. Like one thing I've seen a lot with like more senior people or people who are pushing to be at a more senior level is exactly that point. So for example, starting to provide weekly status updates. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Like there's formats like the 515 rule. So the idea that you like, or 15-5, sorry, this way around. So you spend 15 minutes writing it and it takes 5 minutes to read. So it can be a really short thing, but it may actually help you, one, reflect on your own work, which is always a good thing, again, especially in high change environments, but then also it can be super efficient or effective in helping you get your message across and helping others understand where you're at. And also with that, build a bit of a perception of your work and of what you're doing and how you're sort of stepping up as a leader. So that's awesome. Now that we've covered a bunch of principles, so around understanding what matters in your organization, getting this context, maintaining a really high sense of communication, pushing information as much as possible, and then setting a culture of like learning and making these small improvements that Blake talked about earlier are some of the really crucial traits that we've, I think, both experienced in our time. Now that we've covered that, I would love to just dive into a couple of areas more deeply. Blake and I talked before this call and sort of settled on a few. I think the ones that we wanted to talk about in particular were tech, quickly. Then we also wanted to talk about scaling yourself, which Blake's already touched on a bit. I think it's one of the most crucial aspects of this whole thing. And then talk about delivery and people and teams, and then potentially also a bit more on communication. So we just wanted to dive into that a bit and touch on different experiences that we've made, things that we found successful or effective in all of that. So let's start with tech, because when we did our pre-call, Blake said we don't want to talk about tech. So tell me a bit about that. And I actually agree. So let's talk about that.
So when we're talking about tech, you know, especially in engineering management, there is no, and we even have it here, there's no management stack for success. And I think there is no, that applies for the engineering teams themselves. We are people leaders, I think, first and foremost, strategic thinkers, org builders. No one should trust me to go in into an IDE and write code today. My job as an engineering leader is fundamentally to put the right people in the room together and then get out of their way and empower them and help them to make decisions that are good for our customers, for our business, for the success of all of our teams. And so we're not going to sit here and lay out, you know, this backend language and this data storage layer. We're not qualified to do that necessarily, but what we can talk about is tools and approaches that we use for solving these problems. So, Lena, for you, how do you approach technical decision making? How does tech factor into the work that you do as an engineering leader?
And I think it's an interesting point in that, and you just said we're not qualified to talk about this. I would even go one step further and say, the session is specifically also for people who are like senior and upwards. And even if you're, you know, no matter if you're a developer or a manager, the biggest point that I would take from this and also from what you just said is essentially the tech ultimately is a tool to solve the problem. And the problems are usually much bigger. And I think it's very tempting to lean into this idea that knowing sort of the quote unquote right stack or the right tools is going to help you solve problems. And to a certain degree, that's of course the case. Like some like good or decent tooling is going to make a lot of things at least not harder than they need to be. But at the same time, as you just, I think very aptly said, there is no one size fits all and there is no sort of management stack for success. I love that, the way of putting that. So, but what I find, to sort of loop back to your question, is that ultimately there are a couple of things that you can consider when it comes to tech and hypergrowth that are beyond, hey, how much load can this specific technology handle? One of those things is essentially looking at, like, is your stack manageable? Like if you're an early stage startup and you've already got like several programming languages that you're using because that's just the way the founding team worked, you may want to look at reducing that at some point. Or you may look at, well, are we using very, let's say, exotic programming languages or very specific tools that only very few people use? Because especially if you're going into hypergrowth, that's likely going to create a hiring problem. Or if you even, you know, you're planning to move into hypergrowth soon, looking at what of our stack is like approachable? Are the languages that we're using, the tools that we have, are those relatively standard in the industry, or are there a lot of things that are going to create a huge onboarding hurdle? Because if you're trying to bring in a lot of people at once, you're probably going to want to be able to have them ready to work and moving relatively quickly and not spend a lot of time hiring people and then spend another 6 months until they're able to actually do effective work in your system. And then another point that I've realized is really important in hypergrowth is sort of maintaining a bit of a systems view. So a bigger picture of the architecture of the system overall, because what tends to happen quite often is that you bring in a lot more people and those folks are at mid or senior levels or even staff levels or above. And at the same time, they will typically be quite focused on their teams and on helping their team succeed, because that's also usually what the delivery calls are about. But then what tends to happen is that there is not a lot of people anymore who actually know the entirety of the system at a higher level and who maintain that kind of view. And at the same time, having that view can be really crucial for helping people in the teams make the right decisions or make smart decisions that are useful for the company in the long term. Like, how have you dealt with that, Blake?
Yeah, I like to think of the best metaphor that I ever come up with for this specific issue is making sure that engineering leaders feel like they have a bungee cord attached to their belt that is attached at the other end to all those folks that they're leading. So there will be cases, in whether it's hypergrowth in terms of teams or headcount, or it's hypergrowth and scalability and success. You know, maybe you're an overnight success in the marketplace and all of a sudden you realize your systems aren't keeping up with the pace and success of your business, which is a great problem to have. But when you think about leading teams, whether it's technical leadership or people leadership, anytime you run forward and progress, you need to make sure that those teams that you're leading are pulling up behind you. It might not be at the same rate. It might not even be at the same pace every time. It might vary depending on what you're going through. But a big part of leadership is lifting those up around you. And I think I've seen some of the smartest people I've worked with in my career fall down the most when they forget that fundamental truth of leadership. Is it's fundamentally not about hero culture. For me, it's not about solving the most interesting technical problems. We have thought leaders in our industry. You're probably working with thought leaders in whatever industry you're in, if you're listening to this now, that really are at the bleeding edge of innovation, that really are doing wild things with tech. But the vast majority, certainly anecdotally speaking in my career, of what we do as engineers, it's actually kind of rinse and repeat of the same things we've done before, maybe a little bit better, maybe at higher scale, maybe cleaner. But we can't forget those fundamentals of when you have an associate engineer, when you have somebody fresh out of college or out of a boot camp or a career switcher or an intern come in, can they work on your systems confidently? They might not be working on the most critical path. They might not have the most impact that, you know, a staff or above engineer is going to have. But I think the hallmark of success for me for technical leaders is, can we make sure that everyone can contribute, that everyone can have impact? And that sort of sense of, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot in what you just described and the lowering the bar, essentially. It's like if you have a high barrier to entry, you're going to set yourself up for failure because ultimately all the work's going to remain on your plate. And that's really the last thing you want in a situation like that.
Yeah. And
that's actually,
I was just going to say that we talk about bus factor a lot. And the fewer people, and especially to take this back to the tech choices, you know, if you're making sure you're making technical choices, not just to solve the technical problems you have, but the organizational problems of the future, if you pick really esoteric tech, make sure you have good reasons for that. I'm not saying to never go out and pick something that's exotic or interesting or new if it's solving the technical problems you're having, but know that the longer things go on, the harder it's going to be to support, the more difficult that bar is to cross for the folks that hopefully as you're going through hypergrowth, you're seeing success behind it, is really planning for the years to come with really durable solutions.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, thought the bungee visual you used was a great also connecting point to sort of dive into the next area around sort of scaling yourself, because I think we both agreed when we were preparing for this that this is actually one of the most interesting and important and also one of the hardest parts about this whole topic of hypergrowth. The first thing that I've realized in my work, which has dealt with a lot of sort of high change organizations and still the case now with the people I'm supporting as a coach and consultant, is that just the context switch is one of the hardest hurdles in all of it. And again, it's one of those things that kind of sounds well at an abstract level. Sure, you get it. The context broadens, your company grows, and you have to grow with it. So you're probably working less on, like, say, just the task level, but you're leveling up and operating, like you're running projects or things at the epic level, if you want to use Jira terms, which I know everyone loves. That's something that kind of sounds really straightforward if you say it like this at the abstract level, but the majority of people who I've worked with at some point have really struggled with this, and honestly, so have I. Because at this point, you've learned how to be successful. You know how to, for example, run your tasks, get all of this work done, succeed, feel great about your work. And then suddenly there's all this change. You're expected to work at a much higher level, but at the same time, you don't have anyone who's telling you what that actually means or how to do it. And the organization is still shifting around you. And so we've talked earlier about obtaining context and speaking with, like, your manager or with peers. And so making sure you actually understand things that are appropriate for the new level that you need to work on is really important. So making sure you have actually a solid understanding of strategy, you understand roadmaps, you understand at least quarterly goals, like whatever it is you can hold on to that's more durable than the next week, like hold on to it for dear life. And make sure you use that context also to help others, like to the point of sort of leveling others up, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Like, make sure that you're able to also share that context with other people. Blake, what other things have you sort of found useful in sort of elevating your role? What should people think about?
It's interesting because, like I said, in sort of the intro, is high growth organizations, and especially periods of high growth, whether it's, again, 5 to 10, 10 to 100, 100 to 1,000. There's no magic number here. For me, it presents opportunity. It's an opportunity to really look around and see what your organization needs. And this is going to be different for everybody. There's no, go be the Jira process person. Go be the technical architect person. No, don't be that. There is no one tried and true statement for everybody, but it's really helpful to really evaluate from your vantage point. You can be unbelievably biased in this process because it is your perspective of what does the organization need to get to the next step. So whether it's, you know, more process, whether it's more communication, whether it's enabling and facilitating conversations, really think about what would help you in your position and somebody coming into the position that you just left or you just grew out of, and how we as an organization can think about how to fill that gap to make sure things aren't dropping on the floor. Because when you go through these areas of expansion, you know, senior technical leaders, senior people leaders are going to be thinking about a whole different level of context. New folks are coming in and there's this expectation that everything is running great. But I think in you know, startup world, that is rarely the case. You know, in the corporate world, the same is true, but especially when these teams are going through these rapid bursts of change, there are opportunities to really notice issues, to notice what's just not being done, and figure out ways that you can pitch in to help, to facilitate, to drive, to not necessarily do the work yourself. If you find yourself doing lots of day-to-day tasks as a senior member of the team, you're probably not leveling up the people that might be at your level or beneath, and there's opportunities to facilitate and guide. And, you know, we'll talk about it in a bit, but really changing how you think of success is kind of the key part, but really noticing, you know, what's just not getting done. And as importantly, not doing things to get you to the point where you're going through the next burst of change. You know, it's the same for engineering. You don't want to do 10x unless you know you're going to hit 10x scales. Focus on 2x first and get there. How about you, Lena? How do you navigate sort of the ambiguity of a position changing without maybe a title change, or just, hey, we've gone from 40 people to 80 people this year. How do you approach just the ambiguity of it all?
Yeah, I think it can be quite tough. I mean, I've certainly like struggled with it for quite a while, and it's taken because it's not necessarily something that was sort of in my natural wheelhouse. I would say an interesting factor here is also what different organizations value. In my experience, like something that's quite valued in a lot of startups is essentially, you know, confidence and what I would always describe as aggression, in the sense of like really going for it, just grabbing work. A lot of organizations promote based on essentially people stepping outside of the role that they're assigned and doing sort of work at the next level and doing so unprompted. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is a separate debate that we could probably spend another hour on, but for the sake of this conversation. So there's a lot about sort of putting yourself out there, doing things that you probably haven't done before, doing things that you may not feel comfortable with because you may not have a lot of experience with it. And that can be scary. Like for other people, it's fine because they are like naturally more confident and they feel like it's a just sort of a thing that comes naturally to them. But if you're not that kind of person, I would encourage you to, you know, try small things out and see if you can, first of all, kind of acknowledge the ambiguity that you're dealing with and also sort of understand what it does to you. Like, is it something that you feel comfortable with, that's like fun to you? Or is it something that's a bit scary and that's a bit difficult to figure out? And just working through that already can be, I think, a huge shift, or lead to a shift in just being more cognizant of what's happening to you, and also of getting you out of that reactive mode and into a mode that's a bit more sort of proactive and puts you into a position to actually then make use of that opportunity that Blake, who is probably very comfortable with ambiguity, that opportunity that he keeps talking about. And then I also think what I mentioned earlier, sort of just developing some clarity where you can. And I think a big part of that is also about managing up and essentially finding other ways to know that you're doing well. Like, you probably won't have, as Blake just said, you probably won't have a title change. You probably won't have a clear document that lists your role and responsibilities. And so there's a lot of having to make it up as you go and as the organization shifts around you. So the one component that I've just seen be incredibly helpful is managing up effectively. So understanding what your manager needs, understanding what your boss's boss needs, because that can help you figure out how to make your boss look good, which is always a win. And then also understanding what your boss values, and what principles or values apply in your organization at large, and how to use those things to get wins for your boss. You know, can you do this one thing that, as Blake just said earlier, that sort of fell on the ground? Can you just take this and fix it, or at least, or work with someone to help them fix it? Again, to the spirit of sort of growing your own role and not doing everything yourself anymore. And also when working with your boss, one big step can also be to focus on outcomes and results instead of approaches, because a lot of bosses in hypergrowth, and it's worth keeping in mind, they may struggle themselves. This may also be a position they actually haven't ever been in. And so, to like, in a similar way as you're struggling with figuring out what to do, they may do the same thing. And so if you can put some things forth, as described earlier, like say, hey, here's what I understand, or here's what I've been working on, here's my weekly status update, this can be super helpful to at least provide some structure. And even if then the things that you're doing aren't all sort of the greatest, you'll at least be very quickly able to learn and iterate on them together. And it can also help you understand much better, like, are you doing well? How are you doing in your current role? Are you sort of elevating yourself up as the organization's growing around you?
Yeah, and I think on that point, you know, self-awareness is a remarkably powerful tool for a leader. You know, a lot of us, when you get to a certain point in your career, you have a brand, you have a personal style. Knowing what that style is and leveraging it to great effect can be a really powerful tool, but also knowing what your weaknesses are and being honest about them. You know, I think decently into Lena and I's working relationship, I realized, and we've worked on this for months, was that I have basically two levers, and they're very specific to me, but hopefully this resonates with somebody, is I can do really well in situations where I have a lot going on. So lots of tactical work, lots of things in flight. And I can also do really well when there's a really high degree of ambiguity. Mm-hmm. So things are not clear. We have rough shapes of goals. We have targets we might want to hit, but not a clear idea of how to get there. But when those 2 meters are peaked, I do terrible and it frustrates me and it burns me out. And so figuring out what those levers are for you and how to dial them back. I think one of the most powerful things that I realized working, Lena, with you was, oh, the things that I am doing day to day that I am good at, those are really good things to delegate and to teach somebody else how to do, because I know how to do them. I know what success looks like. I know how to, or at least I learned on the job how to coach people through how to do things the way that I do them, and to know that output is different than the work going in to produce that output. So to say, this is what I expect. These are my expectations for whether it's a status report or running a meeting or a monthly planning or whatever the case may be. But really taking those things that I'm very comfortable with doing and handing them off so that I can devote more time to the things that make me a little more uncomfortable. So flourishing in that ambiguity, buying space for the things that I know I need to work on, and just being open and honest. You know, I think a lot of times, especially in hyper growth, it can feel like these opportunities are, oh, I just have to push this thing through. I have to get it done. If I drop this thing on the ground, it's going to be, that's on me. But in all of these, and I know that we both have a very team oriented perspective on these things, is leaning on your team, leaning on your peer managers, your peer technical leaders, leaning on your boss, leaning on your support system of not spinning and not doing things in the dark and hoping for an outcome, saying, this is where I'm at, doing that self-introspection and seeing, what am I failing at? What do I really need help with? And going out and finding that help is, a lot of times you'll be rewarded for giving somebody the opportunity to mentor you through a thing or to tap into their previous experience. It can be really rewarding on both sides. And if you're honest about it, it doesn't show up as weakness. It shows up as self-awareness, which again is a massively valuable tool.
Yeah, I would very much agree. Like, many of the best leaders I've worked with have a really high degree of self-reflection, self-awareness, and a great introspective ability. And I think it really goes a long way. And I think that also segues really nicely in what you've alluded to earlier already about, so if you're feeling of success, and that's another thing that I've seen just a lot of people struggle with in these kinds of high growth environments, because you often go from being able to deliver or do a lot of work by yourself on your own or sort of with the help of the team. But in the end, sort of you get that pull request merged, you get that commit in, and you get that dopamine hit. Whereas suddenly you're in this much more sort of higher level role. It's much more ambiguous. Much more of the work is longer term. There's political issues involved. There's other people involved, and we all know that hell is other people. And suddenly there's a lot of like having to basically figure out how to be successful in very different ways. And you're not getting things off your to-do list as quickly probably either. And the dopamine's missing. So adjusting how you feel successful and what makes you feel accomplished and good about your work can be a really important part of that as well. And so going from sort of doing work yourself to helping others succeed, being successful through others by coaching them, by mentoring them, by guiding them, by delegating, maybe even delegating some work that you would have loved to do previously, but you know it's a good opportunity for someone else. That can be a really huge jump, but at the same time, it's such a crucial step because it can completely shift, honestly, what you're capable of and what you're able to reach in your career.
Yeah, and this, it's a team sport, right? It's no one in this industry is going out and absolutely killing it by themselves. There are always folks, there's partners in management, there's partners in tech, there's cross-functional partners that we work with day in, day out, whether that's product managers, designers, user researchers, there's cross-functional folks that we might rarely see, but are important relationships to have in marketing and sales, in IT, across the organization. No one is doing this by themselves. And so being able to navigate these conversations and really redefine what success is for yourself can really help unlock how you get there together.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's actually another great segue, because I'd love to talk a little bit about delivery. So obviously delivery shifts quite a bit as well. You suddenly, your organization is much larger. You've had all these new people coming in. You probably have some really tough goals to hit at the same time. And so I'd love to talk a bit about sort of, what we've seen work. And I'll just throw the first thing out there, which I just think is so crucial, which is just keeping work small. Blake talked earlier about this culture of sort of small changes. DevOps culture is obviously really crucial in that, as with the idea of making change easy and making change sort of a habit for teams, really. So keeping work small is another really simple thing, but it's so important. And it can also be really hard because you may also want to sort of run larger technical investments. Maybe even you have this refactoring idea that would really unlock new capabilities that you also want to do. And so figuring out how to get small experiments out, get small wins, and be able to really continue seeing results and see them quickly can be really important in sort of managing high growth, because high growth is usually not the time for big investments, and not necessarily the time for big leaps, because you're already leaping big when it comes to building out the organization. And so keeping delivery focused on small things or big wins that are broken down into small steps along the way can also be an approach. It's really, really crucial in that.
So question for you, Lena. One of the things that I've seen, especially in startup culture, and that's most of my background is working with high growth startups as well, is you have folks that are going through these periods of change that joined early or certainly earlier. Maybe it's a year or two, maybe 3 years ago or even longer. And really I don't want to use the phrase blast radius, but the impact of their changes seems to diminish. Yeah. It's, you go from being one of five engineers and knowing what everybody's working on to being one of 250. How do you approach that conversation with folks? How do you coach folks through that? Because they have to redefine their success as well. They have to redefine what impact really means. How do you help them through that sort of personal transition into this wider world of, you're one of 250 now, and this is just the new reality?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Also, it might be interesting for people who are in that position and who may be struggling with that, and understandably so, because suddenly you may be reporting not to the CTO anymore or the CEO, but you're now reporting to an engineering manager who's five levels down from the CTO and who's just new to the job. And so I think what you just mentioned around sort of the impact shifting is quite a huge question, and I think it can be really tough. One thing that can be worth thinking about is essentially, what are the things that you're bringing to the table that are quite unique to you? What skills do you possess, or what knowledge? Like, oftentimes people in a position like the one you described have very long tenured, have a very good understanding of the system, have probably built a lot of the system themselves. And so figuring out how you can pass on that knowledge to others, like, can you mentor someone? Can you set up an onboarding session, or can you start working with a group of newer people to help them understand the system, help them understand why certain parts work a certain way, maybe also the traps that may be buried someplace, because there's always some traps. So that can be one part. Another part can also be to think about what kind of impact you actually want to have. Because of course, like, you've had a certain impact already previously in the role, but what do you want to do in the future? Like, what are the things that you want to feel good about when you end your workday? And what are the impacts that you want to have? And another part can also be thinking about how to use essentially the specialization that you now have in a bigger sense. So for example, typically you've gone through a transition from being a generalist to being in a highly specialized role. If you've moved from early stage startup to later stage now. And so thinking about, what's the impact that you can have with this specialization that you have now? Or can you shift your role around to being more of a generalist again, for example, by moving into a role that's much more focused on the entirety of the system, like an architecture role or a staff or senior staff level role, whatever leveling system your organization has, where essentially you can use this really special knowledge and understanding that you have to have a much greater impact on a much larger amount of people. So the impact that you have may shift from sort of lines of code that you deliver and parts of the system that you've built to essentially enabling other people to build that system and continue developing it. Blake, do you have anything to add there?
I don't. I mean, that was fantastic. I think that's one of the things that I see, you know, engineers struggle with a lot. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about delivery and results, you really do have to change. It's a constantly shifting scale of what you're having impact on, what your role is, how you're stretching yourself outside the role, and how you're empowering those that maybe are not at your level, or mm-hmm. Maybe they are above, but really helping guide the organization through however it is you can. I think one of the biggest things that I've seen is giving people autonomy and empowerment, but with guardrails of expectations, outcomes, alignment on goals, having a clear vision for where we are headed, and then stepping back. And I think about it like going on a long trip or a journey or whatever. It's you really want to have a destination in mind and be open to the possibility that there might be different stops along the way. But nobody likes a backseat driver. Nobody wants somebody saying, no, you need to adjust. You need to realign. You need to go a little faster, go a little slower. Mm-hmm. You really want to say, hey, this is where we're getting. Plot our course, get us there. And small adjustments along the way, really small tweaks, really, you know, probing questions. In rare cases, dive bombing saves. But most of the time, it's really just having a clear set of expectations, a clear set of goals. And regardless of what level people are at from, and I've seen it from VPs and execs all the way down to brand new engineers to the organization, really having clarity on the vision of what we're trying to do together. And not just that, I think that in isolation can actually frustrate because people are so removed from the organizational level. They're like, how is this ticket going to help that? But really saying, this is the through line from, draw a line from the middle of you to that success metric of all of the steps along the way that empower it. And it's really a remarkable thing to step back and watch, you know, ideas that you would never personally come up with strike you as, wow, that is a thing that this group of people or this individual did completely on their own without me involved, but it was a situation that we can manufacture, that we can set up, that we can empower, and that success can become organic for those folks. And then they are deeply intertwined with the success of the team, the organization, the company as a whole.
Yeah, I love that. You're really bringing it with the visuals today. I think the whole point of the through line, I think, is so important. Like, and that whole point of like going from the vision to what does this actually mean for this ticket that's up next in my backlog? Or what does this mean for my actual daily work? I think that translation or that connection is such a, it can make such a huge difference also for, in terms of motivating people, but also in terms of helping them understand how to go from this really 10,000 foot high level view of here's the vision to, okay, and here's the day-to-day work. And that can be super helpful. And I think, again, to the question about sort of more senior people or people who've been around longer term, like you can make that connection. You can shift your role also to incorporate some of that sort of translation or connection work. I think with that also comes an ability to basically shift your role and essentially learn new tools, because ultimately a lot of the things that we've talked about so far are just, they're leadership tools. They're different ways of communicating, of operating. And with that, they're things that can be learned. They're not things that people are necessarily born with. If you are, good for you. I would love to briefly also touch on just the topic of sort of people and teams, because obviously hypergrowth means teams are most likely growing really fast, lots of new folks. And at the same time, people who've been around for longer term are dealing with all these radical changes to what they used to be used to. And so I'd love to talk a bit about sort of how to support people and teams through that. I think we've touched on a few aspects already, but is there anything that you'd want to add, Blake?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about people and teams, and a lot of what we've been talking about today is leadership through hypergrowth, through growth phases of an organization, is that there's a fundamental difference between management and leadership. Management is a position. It is a role. Leadership is a thing that anyone can do from any position within the organization. And I really think it's important that people realize that is anytime you step into a room and facilitate a conversation, anytime you pull a ticket and become the person that is ushering that ticket through from start to finish, whatever the case may be, you have an opportunity to lead. And being a good leader is also being a good follower and knowing how your role plays into the larger whole. But it's more than just being a technical thought leader. Leadership isn't just telling people what to do. It's listening. It's collaborating. It's all the soft skills that go into working together with a group of human beings towards a common goal. So, you know, anytime we talk about leading, we want to make sure that folks are leading with context. If context is missing, the same instructions might come across completely differently. Yeah. And it's being as transparent as you possibly can be. That doesn't mean exposing every single person to all of the inner workings and conversations that are happening at every single level. Actually, that can add a lot of ambiguity and a lot of lack of clarity to how people get their jobs done. But making sure that you're communicating when decisions are made, how decisions are made, how those decisions will impact people. And just to harken back on something we talked about before, doing that over and over and over again. One of my bosses at one point said, you know, about the time that people start complaining about how many times you've said a thing means they've started hearing it. So really driving those points home when they're happening and being as transparent as you can in your given position.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that this whole point about sort of really bringing people up with you and helping them understand context is also, it's also so important because it, again, it helps people learn those traits. Like they observe the way that you communicate, the way that you lead, and they will be able to emulate those kinds of behaviors as well, which then also helps them elevate themselves in their roles and do the same for others. So it's, you can really help set a great change in motion just through changing the way that you operate there. One thing I would absolutely recommend is like learn to ask questions and learn to ask good questions. There's a whole concept in like coaching training where they teach you to ask powerful questions. And the power of the question is not, as you might think, in asking something that's really well worded or really well framed or super thought out. The powerful question is actually in really listening and in turning off your own brain and your own desire to sound clever or sound smart and really focus on the other person, on what they're expressing, and then being able to respond to that. So being tuned into the people around you can actually help you be really effective in these hypergrowth changes, because it's also going to allow you to build relationships with the new people quicker, understand what they need, understand their motivations, and then be able to respond to that appropriately.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thank you. And just looking at the time, is there anything else that you'd really want to say, Blake, on the whole topic of hypergrowth and navigating it successfully?
Nothing specific. I think, you know, the best general advice I can give to our audience is stretch yourself. Go beyond what you think is personally possible. Reach out for help. Be vulnerable to do it. But be open to possibilities that are beyond kind of what you think about doing day in, day out. And a lot of times, seizing those opportunities is what's going to help move you forward in your career and have the most impact in your organization. Mm-hmm. Lena, how about you?
Yeah. I mean, I would just say, you know, be curious. And there's probably going to be a lot of things that you don't necessarily understand immediately or that don't seem to make sense. Like ask questions and try to understand and then like try to find the opportunities, like see where the work isn't happening and figure out where you want to have impact and then how you can go for having more of that impact. And also have fun along the way. Like it can be exhausting, it can be tiring, but it's also incredibly rewarding and a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.